morning. May it please the court, Ms. Bowman. My name is Glenn Gaffney. I represent the plaintiff, Deb Moravsky. Your Honors, the central issue in this case is whether or not, pursuant to Illinois law, whether or not the plaintiff has established a tribal issue of fact as to this causal connection between her pursuit of rights pursuant under the Illinois Workers' Compensation Act and her termination. Now, the Act specifically provides, at Section 305/4H, that it's unlawful for an employer, individually or through an insurance company, to discharge or threaten to discharge an employee because of that employee's exercise of his or her rights or remedies pursuant to the Act. It's not just the filing of the claim, it's the exercise of her rights or remedies, and that's what's transpired here, Your Honor. Under Illinois law that we must apply, and of course we sit here in diversity, in a diversity suit, and as I stated in the Claxton case, U.S. Supreme Court, the accident of diversity should not cause a differentiation between the law we apply here in federal court compared to the law that's applied in the state courts. And this satisfies the twin aims of avoidance of form shopping and equal administration of justice. And I've also cited the Jackson versus Bungie Corp. and Horton versus Miller Chemical for the proposition that in a JMOL type setting, that we also apply the state standard of summary judgment here in federal court. Although, of course, we use FRCP 56 and Local Rule 56.1 et al., we still look to the Illinois standard in applying summary judgment. Now, in this case, under Illinois law, circumstantial and direct evidence creates the causal link. Now, the standard as articulated by the Illinois Supreme Court in Clemens is a little bit different than the federal court's articulation of retaliatory causes of action under Title VII or under, for example, ADA or ADEA. There's some slight differentiations that I think are worthy of noting. First of all, pursuant to the Clemens decision and the cases under Illinois law that speak of Clemens or speak of retaliatory discharge, this concept of causally linked, which is the plaintiff's burden to show a triable issue of fact here on this issue of causally linked, that standard is different than the articulation in the Seventh Circuit of direct evidence, for example, that's articulated in the Stone versus City of Indianapolis decision. Under Illinois law, it's clear that circumstantial evidence of various types, especially in a JMOL type of review, is sufficient. And furthermore, under the Clement decision, another differentiation is that assuming that plaintiff has circumstantial direct evidence of the causal link, it then, under the Clemens decision, becomes the burden of proof of the defendant to show a legitimate non-retaliatory reason for the discharge. Now, in this case, we have quite a bit of direct and circumstantial evidence. Just to highlight some of the evidence, prior to being placed on leave of absence, Ratsky was at a manager's meeting. She was told by the loss prevention people that we got to get these workers' comp claims down. Here's a list of people who have high medical bills. You got to get these people discharged for other reasons. Her name was at the top of the list because she had the biggest medical claim. At the time that she was placed on leave of absence, she had been working without an assistant manager and without a shift manager, working long hours in peak season. The market manager, which is her boss, comes in and says, Taco Bell can't accommodate your needs anymore, so we're going to put you on leave of absence. Now, Ratsky never wanted to be on leave of absence. Her doctor never said she should be on leave of absence. This case is very atypical from the standard retaliatory discharge case in many ways, and this is just one of them. After she's put on leave of absence by her manager, she asks, when can I return to work? Her manager says, when you settle your claim, or you are 100%. 100% or settle your claim. Either or, Radke must abandon her rights and remedies pursuant to the Act in order to get her job back. She had two choices. A, get it work, her job, or B, settle her claim cheap. This became even clearer later when the manager, not the manager, but the insurance adjuster sends a letter saying, we are going to send your client to vocational rehab unless you settle. Here's the settlement offer. Unless you settle, we're going to send your client to vocational rehab. And of course, under this setting, vocational rehab really means outplacement services. Subsequently then, in the report that's written by the outplacement company, or the CRA it's called, it says, per Terry Rice of PepsiCo. Now, PepsiCo is the parent company of Taco Bell. Per Terry Rice of PepsiCo, there is no job available that Ratsey can do with her limitations, which at that time really wasn't true because the medical doctors had said as of that point that she was fit for duty. Then, in March of 1998, Taco Bell's rehabilitation consultant, a man by the name of Daniel Minich, based upon the medical records in their entirety, specifically sends a report saying that Ratsey can return to her job as restaurant manager. Again, Taco Bell refuses to allow her to return to work. She tries in various ways. She tries through her attorney. She calls 1-800-RED-TACO, which is their number that you call. She's told either you have to be, quote-unquote, 100%. And saying that you're 100% doesn't necessarily mean that you are not fit for duty. To me, it appears pretty obvious that what Taco Bell says is disrepute your claim. Don't ever claim a pain again. We don't care if you can do your job. We don't care that you have done your job. We don't care that the doctors say you're physically capable of doing your job. Disrepute your claim or settle your claim or you're not getting your job back. Subsequently then, in January of 1999, the matter at the IIC, Illinois Industrial Commission, gets scheduled for a hearing. There's communications then amongst the HR department people and the people out in California who are the benefits administrators that they need some witnesses to come and appear and testify. There's a series of communications that are now generated in early 1999. The matter goes to IIC hearing in March of 1999. Nothing is taken as to Ratsey's employment at that point until April of 1999 when the arbitrator renders a decision saying that she's entitled to 8D1 benefits. Now, of course, 8D1 benefits is not the type of benefit that would preclude her from saying that I'm fit for duty. At that point, then, she is told subsequently that, well, there's communications to the effect that Ratsey should be terminated retroactively to March 1st. Now, I'll go ahead and save the last couple of minutes for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gaffney. Ms. Ballmer?
Good morning. Jody Ballmer on behalf of Defendant Taco Bell. May it please the Court. We submit that Judge Holderman's decision below correctly adopted and applied the correct summary judgment standards as well as the correct Illinois law standards. We disagree with plaintiff's recitation that
Judge Holderman at one point in his decision says, I believe, that the only issue is the question of timing. Doesn't he say that in this?
I think Judge Holderman...
What does he mean by that? It seemed to me to be a lot of other issues that are argued in the briefs, anyway.
Judge, I don't believe that Judge Holderman's decision only discussed timing. I think that Judge Holderman discussed the issue of causal connection. And connection with the timing issue, his ruling was that the chain of events in connection with timing did not raise an inference of retaliation, but did not say that the timing issue alone defeated plaintiff's causal connection claim. Judge Holderman's decision focused more on plaintiff's admissions at the IIC hearing that plaintiff did not discuss.
He says at page 6 of the appendix, on review of Ratsey's voluminous submissions, the only evidence that presents even a scintilla of connection is the temporal proximity of the IIC's final decision on April so-and-so to that of Taco Bell's notification. Ratsey, isn't that, he's saying that's the only evidence that means anything here?
Judge, I think that he considered all of plaintiff's evidence with all reasonable inferences in her favor. He considered the statements by human resources around that time frame. I think the reason he focused on the timing issue because up to that point, there was no termination or adverse employment action. Right up until the time prior to the close of discovery, plaintiff had claimed throughout the litigation that she was in fact terminated when she was placed on leave of absence, and the focus of her claim was on that. It became clear prior to the end of discovery to plaintiff that in fact the termination in fact occurred in 1999 after the IIC's determination that Ms. Radke was unable to perform her regular course of her regular employment in the restaurant field. And that decision was based on Radke's admissions and position at the IIC that she, and she was speaking in the present tense, that she was no longer, she was not unable to work in a job that required prolonged standing. She specifically said she sought out a job that allowed her to sit, and she talked about the fact that her current employer, Gartner Buick, allowed or knew that she needed, quote, I need a sitting down job. She represented that in her application to Gartner Buick, and she also discussed the fact that during her employment with Taco Bell, prior to being placed on leave, over 18 months, her condition did not improve. Regardless of what the company's IME expert that testified, her doctors had repeatedly stated, in particular Dr. Kalikian, had said that she needed a job that did not require her to engage in prolonged standing on hard floors. And he had recommended that she switch occupations. I think Judge Holderman considered the evidence and detailed Ms. Radke's employment history with the company prior to being placed on leave, and then went on to discuss the fact that at the IIC hearing, Ms. Radke made these admissions. She, in fact, was awarded a wage differential, which, the workers' comp system contemplates. There will be situations where an employee may be injured to the point where they can't resume their prior occupation. And she, in fact, received an award because she was no longer able to pursue, at least partially, her current occupation.
There's been a lot of debate about the so-called standing requirements of this job, but didn't Jones, who is the decision maker, indicated that she didn't know that there were any standing requirements?
No, Judge, I don't think that's a fair representation of her testimony. Her testimony, she had never seen a written job description requiring the 8 hours, and quite frankly, the functional capacity evaluations that the company did use, as Holly Martin testified, was used by the workers' comp folks and the folks in corporate who made those determinations of how to accommodate. But what Phyllis Jones did testify, as did Phil Ree and the other company witnesses, is that you cannot do the restaurant general manager job without standing 8 hours a day. Both of those witnesses detailed the requirements of the position and how they had both, in fact, performed the same job. And, you know, they're making tacos all day. And they're up, they're supervising people, they're in the facility, they're meeting customers. And there's no admissible evidence other than Radke's claim that she could get away with not standing 8 hours. That doesn't mean that wasn't the company's requirement. And in fact, I think the evidence shows that you couldn't, that the job could not be performed as the company expected without the ability to stand 8 hours a day. And in fact, Deborah Radke's admissions at the IIC confirm that in fact is the case. In 1990, Deborah Radke testified that both before and after her accident, she was on her feet 95% of the time during a 10-hour day at least 5 days a week. So I would say that Judge Holderman did apply the correct legal standard in the decision. He specifically discussed Erie, and we do disagree with plaintiff's position that the federal judgment as a matter of law standard, the state judgment as a matter of law standard, or the state summary judgment standard would apply, because I think the current state of the Seventh Circuit law is that summary judgment standard under Rule 56, as well as the Rule 50 standard, are matters of federal procedure, and they will be applied across the board. And I think there was a decision that was cited by Judge Holderman that I believe Judge Cudahy was a participant in which specifically discussed the fact that there may be situations where Rule 56 standards have resulted in a case that will be granted in summary judgment, that in state court it may have gone to trial. But the Seventh Circuit has specifically rejected plaintiff's position that the state summary judgment standard should be implied, and recognizes the fact that that may in fact be the result. As far as the Clemens decision, Judge Holderman correctly adopted and applied the Clemens decision. He cited the Brockie case in which the Clemens standard was discussed, and the Judge Holderman enunciated the Clemens elements for the workers' comp retaliation claim, and went on to say, as far as plaintiff's claim that the burden shifted to defendant, I think that the Clemens decision specifically says that the burden does not shift to the employer, even if the employer chooses, even though it doesn't have to, chooses
now,
to provide.
Couldn't she also have been fired for securing other employment and not,
yes, Judge,
advising Taco Bell of that?
Correct. And in fact, that is part of the reason for the termination. What happened was, after the Illinois Industrial Commission decision, the carrier notified Taco Bell that Deborah Radke had retained other employment, full-time employment, with a car dealership, and that her condition prevented her from pursuing her regular occupation in the fast food industry. Taco Bell and the carrier notified the company that because it was going to terminate her LTD benefits. Upon learning of those facts, which are based upon the IIC decision, obviously, Taco Bell corporate folks in the corporate area in the benefits department emailed the field representatives and said her employment should be terminated because she had undertaken full-time employment elsewhere. And Illinois law recognizes that you don't have to retain an employee who's working full-time elsewhere, as Judge Holderman correctly recognized. Illinois law also recognizes, obviously, even under the Workers' Compensation Act, that there will be situations, even though someone has filed a workers' compensation claim, if their condition renders them unable to perform their duties, an employer need not retain them. It was Taco Bell's good faith belief upon the information it received in the April 1999 timeframe that Deborah Radke was unable to perform the functions of her job, and that good faith belief is confirmed by Deborah Radke's admissions at the IIC hearing. We submit that Judge Holderman's decision was well-reasoned, applied the correct legal standards, and found that based upon the undisputed material facts related to the standing requirements of the position, as well as Deborah Radke's admissions about that condition and the fact that she was working full-time elsewhere, that summary judgment was appropriate in this case.
Thank you, Ms. Bowman. Mr. Gaffney?
Your Honor, regarding the issue of other employment, under the Illinois Workers' Compensation Act and under Illinois common law, Radke had a duty to cooperate in good faith with vocational rehab. And as the Illinois Supreme Court said in the Heartline decision,
didn't she have to report this extra income?
Judge, she did. And Taco Bell said,
when?
Unbeknownst to Taco Bell. In the joint appendix, there is the settlement agreement that's entered into between the parties regarding settlement. It specifically says, employer notified,
when?
Return to work date 9/97 for another. In 9/97, the employer was notified. At the time that she obtained vocational rehabilitation employment, in fact, it was Taco Bell's rehabilitation consultant that got her the job. It was her duty to do that.
After they advised her that they knew it, isn't that right?
After they obtained, certainly, after they put her in vocational rehab to find
after
her other
they,
employment.
After the automobile agency advised them that they had employed her.
No, the agreement between the parties indicates that Radke had orally notified Taco Bell in 9/97 that she had obtained other employment. In fact, they knew because the amount of money that she was receiving from workers workers' comp went down because there was mitigating employment. So she had a duty to mitigate. She did mitigate, and if she hadn't cooperated through that, then she would have been obviously subject to termination, and she would have also lost her workers' comp benefits on top of that. Finally, we get to the point where the ultimate more direct evidence even becomes at the time that Taco Bell sends Radke the standard letter that all employees in her situation get, advising her that she has to notify them of a date within 10 days that she wants to return to Taco Bell. And then when she does that, Jones specifically makes the statement that the reason why that she's not allowed, and the letter claimed then a mistake, is because that she has the pending workers' compensation claim. Regarding the IIC testimony, if you look at the testimony in context, the testimony goes all the way back to 1995. Which is the time that she first sustained her injury, and while she was working during 1996. Much of that testimony relates to what she was doing during that time frame. And in particular, in the summer of 1996, Radke makes it clear that she's working without an assistant manager, without a shift manager, working during peak season, putting in 14 hours a week. At that time, she said, she was working on her feet 95% of the time. This idea, however, and if I just may finish the very last thought, that this stand walk requirement of 8 hours today is totally pretextual based on the record, because none of the people who made any decisions relating to Radke at any time in any record, in any document, in any testimony, indicated that they had used, thought of, or even considered any such document. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Captain. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.